As we look ahead at what might get done during the 2022 legislative session, we're turning our attention now to the state's workforce with Senate Labor Committee Chair Jessica Ramos, a Queens Democrat who joins the show to talk about the priorities for her committee this year at the Capitol. Welcome back to the show, Senator.
Thank you for having me, Dave.
So in your capacity as Labor Committee Chair, is there a top priority for you, either because it holds maybe a special place in your heart or because of the problem it addresses or some other reason altogether?
Well, we have a lot going on with all sorts of different workforces in New York State right now. Of course, because we're at this critical juncture, hopefully at the tail end of the pandemic, and a lot of people still feel unsafe at work. A lot of people haven't been able to recover lost wages from the pandemic, let alone pre-pandemic, because we know wage theft has been so rampant here in New York. And so, yes, we're setting out to do several things in the Labor Committee, and we're hoping to be successful in being able to organize with nail salon workers, with workers who've had wages stolen. I'm going to be talking a lot about our minimum wage. And of course, I'm coming back for a second version of the Excluded Workers Fund so we can help everyone who was left out.
Well, the excluded workers have also branched out sort of their wish list for 2022. So it's not just about getting caught up on some of that federal aid that they were shut out on. We've talked to them about creating a unemployment system that would kind of be parallel to the existing one that would ensure that undocumented New Yorkers, as well as other New Yorkers who don't qualify for the existing benefits, would have access to unemployment-like benefits in the future. What do you think about something like that? Is that something where you'd like to put your weight behind in 2022?
I will actually be introducing a bill that aims to tackle this issue precisely. Look, the success of the Excluded Workers Fund showed us or uncovered the hood, if you will, on a very, very big problem that we're having in New York State. And that is that the unemployment insurance system does not corroborate with how our economy actually works. Right now, too many workers in New York State are being paid cash by their employers or by the person who's hiring them to do a job. And yes, many times the person happens to be undocumented, but actually it doesn't. The person doesn't have to be undocumented. And that's what we saw with the excluded workers when 99% of those who were approved had actually paid their taxes for at least the past 3 years. Because they had to show proof of 2019, 2020, and 2021. So we are, unfortunately, the current system isn't exactly designed to respond to this shift in our economy. And so we need to make sure that the labor law catches up with this situation. And we need to continue to recognize the contributions and the work of those who have been placed in this predicament, not getting unemployment insurance, but yet, you know, they haven't been able to work or lost a significant amount of wages and are behind on rent. Because to me, that's what I think often gets lost on, they're undocumented people. And honestly, they're human beings. They're human beings who still have to pay rent, who still have to pay their medical bills, who still have to put food on the table and buy school supplies and the rest. So it's money that gets pumped back directly into our economy. It's what I saw here in my own community. It's what is being felt out on Long Island and in some places in Westchester. And we want to make sure we're reaching every corner of the state that perhaps didn't get information about this fund in time, because there are people who would benefit in every corner of the state, even way up north, and we want to make sure that they're included too.
In the same vein, I guess, as a parallel unemployment system, we have The issue of securing employee benefits more broadly for independent contractors in New York, including those people working with third-party mobile apps, but it's obviously well beyond that. You know, newspaper delivery people, people who have maybe their own little business or independent contractors. The last big push in this space was 2 years ago when then-Governor Andrew Cuomo proposed a review of the issue that went nowhere fast. Is this topic almost too controversial to be addressed in Albany, or is there reason to suspect that something might get done on this front in 2022?
Well, it's certainly been the topic of conversation much more than before within the past few months here in New York. Look, as labor chair, there's no way that I would help codify anything that comes close to what looked like Prop 22 over in California. I don't want us to be bogged down in litigation that might delay benefits and improvements for these workers. And I also think that despite working for the same apps, like, for example, Uber, actually delivery workers and taxi drivers or for hire vehicle drivers have kind of different situations going on. And so I've been working very closely with the deliveristas or the delivery workers. And by the way, I know it's cold everywhere in New York. So if you're ordering food, you better be tipping those guys really well. And the drivers who, you know, bear the brunt of a lot of the overhead that goes into driving for Uber or Lyft. And certainly don't enjoy protections and lack a real union. I mean, they're currently able to deal with their activation issues if they go to the company union, right? The organization that receives funding from Uber itself. And so it's a difficult dynamic, but one that we're going to continue to talk about and educate more New Yorkers about. Because as we're seeing, we're going to need a very strong economic recovery, and we certainly don't want to leave anybody out.
For listeners just joining us, we're talking to Senate Labor Committee Chair Jessica Ramos about some of the workforce issues she's hoping to address in 2022. And at the start of the show, you mentioned the minimum wage as an issue that you're interested in. And right now, it's my understanding that outside of upstate New York, the minimum wage law as it exists is pretty much settled law. Are you hoping to advance the minimum wage to something higher than what we're looking at right now, which is, you know, capped at $15 around the state?
You know, Dave, almost as if by design, you know, inflation is on the minds of New Yorkers and everybody across the country because it's a really important topic. I mean, our food at the supermarket has gotten a lot more expensive over the past few weeks and months. And just the cost of living in general here in New York has always been high, has been high for a very long time. And yet our minimum wage fights always end up being so bloody and so difficult, which is largely unfair. And so I think that what we should do here in New York is actually peg the minimum wage to inflation so that as the price, as the cost of living increases, wages increase as well. What we would be doing exactly would be raising the minimum wage annually according to the consumer price index from the previous year. And I think that this would help working families in New York continue to be able to make this state their home. That's what we want. We want to keep people in New York.
Is that something that you see being pushed in the context of the budget, considering it has fiscal ramifications all over the state? Or do you think that could be done as a standalone bill between now and June?
Well, I of course would love to have it in the budget for the reason you mentioned, but also because that would mean that, you know, it'll happen that much sooner. But it's something that you're going to hear me talking a lot more about a lot more. I think a lot of my allies in the labor movement will also be talking about this a lot more, because being able to remove this issue from our to-do list every few years, you know, the quality of life of New Yorkers shouldn't have to depend on how the pendulum swings every few years in Albany. I think that there are things that we can put in place like this to secure a dignified life for every working family in New York. If you're working, you should be able to afford to exist. That is a basic principle that I hold very dear.
And what about the tipped wage for restaurant industry in New York, which is the last outstanding sub-minimum wage that exists in New York?
Well, you know, my first year in the state Senate, which seems very long ago, even though it's not really, my first year, we were able to do away with the tipped wage for car wash workers. Mm-hmm. And then the governor at the time vetoed my bill and came back with an executive order that did away with the tipped wage, not only for the car wash workers, but also for nail salon workers and basically every worker except for restaurant workers. And so, I have to say, I've been very disappointed in the Department of Labor because they have not put forth the resources in order to make sure that this has been implemented appropriately. And so I still meet nail salon workers who don't know that they are actually supposed to be paid $15 an hour at least. And instead, I hear all sorts of stuff. And the truth is that wage theft is a huge issue in all of these industries, including the restaurant industry, of course. I think doing away with the tipped wage is the right thing to do. And there's a lot to talk about with the restaurants who would be hurt because of their sheer smaller size. And I've also heard some opposition from servers who work in higher end dining in Manhattan. And so I think a lot of discussion needs to happen for us to be able to really correct this injustice and come to an agreement, to an understanding with many of the stakeholders. With regard to the nail salon workers, I'm going to actually be introducing a new bill for them. We're hoping to create a minimum standards board, kind of like the wage board that I created for the farm workers. But here, there, of course, would be the workers at the table and the employers at the table, because, of course, nail salons are usually very small businesses as well. I mean, even the chain ones, there are usually not that many. And so we want to be fair to them, too. And, of course, we need them to stay open, to keep employing these workers. And so we want to be able to help them improve the working conditions in these nail salons, because there are so many chemicals and the like. And we want to make sure that they're being paid an adequate wage. These are, I think, very important for this sector. And then, of course, Dave, we've been talking about it for years now. You know what I'm going to say? The sweat bill. The sweat bill. We need to help workers get back every dime they have rightfully earned from their employer. Too many people are getting their wages stolen by those who hire them, whether it's for a construction project or even in the same restaurant industry that we were just talking about. And these workers really have no recourse in order to get that money back. And many times, maybe their English isn't very good. Perhaps they don't they're undocumented and don't know what their rights are here. And so we want to be able to give them the tools that they need in order to get this money back. And that would be the sweat bill, which would allow them to put a lien on employers' assets. The employers would still keep those assets, but there would be a lien on them until the worker does get all of the money that they're owed. It's to the, you know, before the pandemic, it was to the tune of $1 billion every year, according to the U.S. Department of Labor. And I suspect that since the pandemic has started, this has only grown worse because people are desperate for work, because people, you know, are willing to take jobs with worse working conditions or work for less. You know, employers can take advantage of this. And it's just, I worry, I'm concerned for these workers. And I can't emphasize how important having this tool available, what it would mean for so many communities where these dollars would really make a difference.
Well, returning to what you said about the restaurant industry and sort of the different takes depending on the perspective that different industry players have, does that lead you to believe that any potential changes to the subminimum wage as it pertains to the restaurant industry is going to be more complicated than simply saying we're going to slowly raise the tip wage to whatever the minimum wage is? Do you think there could be other carve-outs in some sort of proposal if there is any actual movement forward?
Right. So this is not a bill I carry. Mm-hmm. So I have not been as privy to the conversations with stakeholders. But I gave you my answer earlier, really based on my experience with the farm workers bill and making sure that I was bringing all of the stakeholders to the table. I think it's, you know, a responsible recipe for compromise and for, you know, moving the ball forward. I mean, right now, as you can see with the farm workers, you know, we're asking the wage board to start implementing a path towards 40 hours. And we knew that we were going to have that fight after passing the farm workers bill. But thank God we did, because then they were able to qualify for disability benefits during the pandemic. And so this is what I mean. As labor chair, this is what I'm hoping to see with the One Fair Wage bill. And we want to make sure that we are implementing legislation as responsibly as we can.
And finally, you and I have spoken recently about your push to realize universal child care access in New York. And we heard from the governor in her State of the State address, where she laid out some very modest expansion of child care access and a very modest investment in the industry's workforce. And we spoke with Senate Majority Leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins, who has said herself that she thinks universal child care access is something that we should strive for, but she declined to make the case that we should be investing billions of dollars in this year's budget. Where do things stand as far as you're concerned? Are you disappointed in light of those two statements from your leader and the governor, or are you still feeling emboldened and optimistic heading into a budget and legislative session?
So let me geek out for a second and just say that, as you know, as someone who's been interested in politics since I was a very little girl, I cannot believe that we're actually finally having this conversation, and the governor is a mom, and our majority leader is a mom, and I'm a mom, and, you know, my partner in this endeavor, Sarah Clark, is a mom, and we've come a long way in this conversation. And I'm so happy that even, you know, many of my colleagues who aren't parents are talking about childcare, like Senator Brisport. And this is important because what the governor laid out in the State of the State really just does not meet the need of the state. I mean, we simply adding 100 subsidies for 100,000 children in a state of nearly 20 million people is really just a drop in the bucket when we know how difficult times are for parents right now, trying to figure out if they can keep sending their child to school with the Omicron surge, trying to figure out how to work, if they can work from home, perhaps what they do cannot be done from home. You know, I've been in places upstate where there aren't child care centers for miles and miles and miles. I think there's a county upstate that I was told only has one or two child care centers in it. I mean, there needs to be a complete shift in how the child care system works in New York. And at the center of it, of course, are the children, making sure that they are safe. And so if we're truly valuing that, then we're going to provide them with the best possible child care. And that means helping build out a system, helping daycare providers actually make a living wage, helping them with their professional development, even so that they're best prepared to serve our children, and certainly making sure that our parents don't break the bank. And that's why we believe in a 7% cap when it comes to subsidized childcare. Look, what we're proposing is doubling the amount of subsidies to families meeting up to 400% of the poverty line. The governor outlined only 275%. And we want to do away with the work requirement. I mean, how is a parent supposed to find go to their job interview if they can't find childcare? And so I just want to encourage everybody to read our bill. It's S7615. And we are really looking to implement, get our gears in motion to implement a program that is comprehensive, that works, and that can serve 93% of New York State families, and even, provide serious help for those making up to $106,000 a year, which doesn't include me, and that's okay, but it includes the New Yorkers who need this helping hand the most. When we talk about a fair and inclusive economy, this is what it is. We either do this the right way or else, we're not going to be able to reach the greatness that we know our state can.
Well, unfortunately, we're going to have to leave it there. We've been speaking with Senate Labor Committee Chair Jessica Ramos. Senator, thank you so much for making the time. I really appreciate it.
No, thank you for having me again, Dave. Until next time.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals in education, human services, and healthcare.
Join us again for Capitol Press Room, a production of WCNY Connected, Syracuse.